Hi, my name's Paul Grogan. Welcome to episode 55 of the All New Gaming Rules podcast. This episode is an audio version of the live Q&A that went out in October 2023. A big thank you to all of my Patreon supporters for funding the channel. And if you like the content that I create and you want to support me directly, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingrules. And now, on with the show. Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for joining me. As always, let me know if you can hear me and you can see me okay. And hopefully the chat will appear on the right-hand side at some point in a minute. Welcome to the live Q&A for, where are we? August. No, October. I know what month it is. I'm barely awake, so apologies in advance if I'm a bit scatterbrained tonight. But yeah, October 2023, live Q&A, funded through Patreon, not sponsored in any way. Big thank you to all of my Patreon supporters for making these videos happen. The chat hasn't appeared yet, but hopefully it will. And yeah, we're going to go through all of the questions that I've been asked in advance on the Guild over on Board Game Geek. And then we're going to be going over to the live questions. So if you're watching this live and you do have any questions for me, please put the word question first in capitals. And then Vicky will see that and she'll extract that information and she'll put it into the document that I'm going to be reading. So the chat's not appeared. It did this last time, I think. And then I fiddled around with it and I did some magic and then it appeared. So let me just go into there. I basically did nothing other than turn it on and off again. And then it might appear. There you go. Turning it on and off again seems to work. So yes, first of all, a big thank you to everybody who has asked questions in advance over on the Guild. For those of you that don't know, I have a Guild. It's over on Board Game Geek. And every month I post a thread sometime in the week before this video goes live, basically saying if you've got any questions for me and you want to ask them in advance, then the Guild is the place to do it. And we're going to go through those questions now. The Guild is over on Board Game Geek, Guild number 2258. If you're not a member of it, please head on over there, join. But make sure you also subscribe, because otherwise you'll join, but you'll never actually see anything. So, right, off we go then. First question from Mike Howes. Would I ever consider reviewing games again? So Mike has been watching recently my top 10 games of 2022 and says it was great to hear me talk about each game in some depth. Well, on that, I could have talked for 20 minutes about each game. I felt when I was doing that video that I really didn't give enough information about each of the games. But if I had have spoken for 20 minutes about each game, it would have been a 3-hour video. Nobody wants to watch that. So, yeah, I tried to keep it brief for that video. But Mike's saying he enjoyed the video. And he wants to know if I'd ever consider reviewing games again. So if you look back at the channel, probably, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, I used to do review videos. In fact, when I started doing review videos, I had this idea that I was going to do what's called quick and dirty reviews. And they were going to be 5-minute videos where I literally just go, here's what I think about the game, what I like, what I don't like. That's it, in 5 minutes. That was my idea. But then, as I started doing more and more of them, people started saying, we want more information about this game. And I ended up in a situation, and the last reviews that I did, I can't remember what the last review that I did was, but the videos ended up being about 15, 20 minutes long. And what I would do is I would give, sometimes I'd give a bit of an overview of the game, just to give my thoughts some context, and then I'd go into detail about what I liked and what I didn't like. I got into a situation where I felt in order for me to be able to provide a good whole review of the game is I needed to play it a number of times at multiple play accounts, possibly the solo mode with different variations, etc., etc. And I was finding that it was actually taking me about 2 to 2.5 days a month out from my regular work in order to cover this game enough to be able to do a review video. And that includes writing the review, filming the review, and editing the review. And as I've spoken about this a number of times over the last few months, it frustrates me the fact that other content creators are able to just knock out videos, you know, 1 or 2, well, you know, 3 or 4 videos a week on top of a full-time job, sometimes on top of a family, and I struggle to do even, you know, 1 or 2 videos a week. I know I do a lot of playthrough videos and they take a lot of time, but for me, creating a review video like that is about 2 to 2.5 days of work. And I'm frustrated by it, not on behalf, not, I'm not saying the other content creators are bad. I'm saying they're great. It's great that they can do that. but I can't do that. So the short answer is no, I'm not planning to go back to doing review videos. However, any playthrough video that I do, if it is not sponsored, we have a round the table discussion at the end of it. So going back to last week on Friday evening, me, Adrian and Marcus, we played Evacuation. That is on the channel now. And if you want to know our thoughts on the game, you just need to skip to the end of that video. Because that is effectively our review of the game after my third play. Adrian and Marcus played it for the first time. But that's where you will find my reviews of games. Also, in my monthly video logs that I do a monthly video log where I talk about everything that I've played in the month. I also give my opinions on the game. So rather than doing individual review videos, I do summarize everything at the end of the month in my monthly video log. So if you don't watch my monthly video logs, then I would recommend them because, yeah, that's where you get my honest opinions on the games. Now, Mike is also saying maybe once a month, do a video of 10 games and why you love them. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have time for that, Mike, but I do the monthly video logs, and that is all of the games that I played, which is usually about, well, it's at least 10, probably about 20. And he's saying, yeah, top 10 videos are the kind of content that consumers love. And yeah, as I say, it frustrates me just because I'm not able to do those types of videos, which I know get the views and I know get all of the engagement. And if I want the views and I want the engagement, I should stop doing playthroughs and I should do two or three review videos a week where I just sit and talk about the game. Because people always say, oh, we don't want to watch opinion videos. We just want to watch a playthrough and we'll make our own decision. That's what everybody keeps telling me. But the views on reviews videos, the views on review videos are always an order of magnitude higher. So that is what people want. Anyway. Next question from Mike. What do you think the average number of times each game you own has been played? Now, I could have done some stats, and I ran out of time this afternoon to do some stats. But if I was to look at my entire games collection and divide that by the number of games that I have played from my collection, I don't know what the average would be. It would probably be two or three. Maybe four. The weird thing is, you've got games in my collection, for example, right, Vindication. Vindication is over there. I think I've played Vindication maybe four times. So that's quite high, considering some of the games in my collection that I've only played once. Like, well, I've not played any of them because they're all new. Aeon's End Legacy, I've played that eight times. Right, let's Pirates of Maracaibo. Pirates of Maracaibo is over there. I've played that twice. But there are some games in my collection I've only played once. There are other games in my collection that I haven't played at all yet. And there are other games in my collection, for example, you know, Android Netrunner. I've still got the core set of Android Netrunner. Played it like 50 times. Arkham Horror the Card Game. I've probably played that 30, 35 times. So there are certain games in my collection where I've played them, you know, many, many, many times. Puerto Rico, I've played that 300 times. Most of it was online. So yeah, I don't know what the average number would be, but it's a weird thing because I've got some at 300 and some down at zero. Anyway, final question from Mike. Am I a person who keeps 250 games and has played them three times each, or do I get 10 plays out of most of your games? I do not get 10 plays out of most of my games, and that is simply because there's so many games coming out all the time that I'm lucky if I get to play a game three times. So Evacuation, for example, I played Evacuation at Essen, then I played it at the Games Club on a Thursday night, then I played it last Friday on the channel. I want to play it again. I really do want to play it again. However, I've played it three times. I've got 15 other games that I brought back from Essen that I haven't played at all yet, so I've got to play them. I mean, it's not that I have to play them. Well, I do for the channel. Nobody wants to see me play an Evacuation every week. Well, maybe they do, but I've got to cover them. I want to cover them. And by the time I've covered all of the new games for Messen, that's going to be 3 or 4 months. And then will I go back to Evacuation? I don't know. My time to actually play games is not as much as you would think. Apart from games that I cover on the channel, we play Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle-earth with Vicky, Mark and Sally every few weeks. and then I've got the games club every other week. That's it. I don't get any other opportunity really to play games. Right, next question from Gavin. Gavin is diabetic and he says, are there any sugar-free biscuits out there on the market that taste good? I have no idea, Gavin. That is that is a question for the chat, because I am not diabetic myself, so I don't have to eat sugar-free biscuits, so I'm not aware of any sugar-free biscuits on the market. Do we know anybody who is diabetic who might know the answer to that question? We don't. I'm afraid I can't help you, Gavin. What I can help you is with the next question, which is, does the complexity of a game influence how likely you are to want to get the game to the table? Yes. There are certain games in my collection which even the ones that I like, the complexity of them is a deciding factor on whether the game hits the table or not. And that is down to the fact that it is usually the case that when I'm playing a game, at least one person hasn't played the game. So let's say, for example, this Friday night. This Friday night, we're going to be playing Kootenai on the channel. Coming soon, this Friday, live on the channel, Kootenai, playthrough video and a review at the end of it. Let's say I wasn't playing Kootenai. Let's say this Friday was a games night where friends were coming round and we didn't know what we were going to play. And possibilities for us to play are A, B, C, D, or E. And if E is a really good game that I really enjoy, but it's a 1 hour teach and then a 4 hour game, there is zero chance of that getting to the table. In fact, if it's a 1 hour teach and a 3 hour game, we've got time to do it. We have time to play that game before I kick people out and go to bed. But that 1 hour teach means it's going to be much harder to convince everybody to go for that than it would be to, say, do a game which is a 20, 25 minute teach. And even if everybody was up for it, the chances are at least one person around that table is not comfortable with a game of that complexity. Now, if you are one of the lucky people and you have games, you have people coming around to your house on a night for a games night, and they all like super heavy, complex games, great. But generally speaking, not everybody is at the same comfort level with the games that they enjoy. So yes, the complexity of a game absolutely influences how likely it is for me to get it to the table. And I think that's probably the case with most groups as well, I would have assumed. Right, next question from Swedish Meeple. And currently I'm spending 10 minutes on answering each question. So we're going to be here for 4 hours tonight. No, we're not. Right. Swedish Meeple says, apart from all the games that you play, do you gamify any other things in life such as house chores and whatnot? I don't. Maybe I should. What are your thoughts on gamification in general? Is it a good way to get boring stuff done, or does it push people to sink even further into the endorphin addiction? That's a good one. I don't do it myself, and I am curious to know if anybody else does it. The only thing that comes close to that is when I'm working on my videos, for example, I have a spreadsheet where I record the entire script. I write the script in a spreadsheet, and then as I'm filming the scenes, I fill in a column and then it basically adds up and it tells me what percentage I am of the way through. That's used as a motivation technique, although sometimes it doesn't work as a motivation because I get to the end of the day and I go, oh no, I'm only 23% of the way through. I wanted to get 50% of the way through. But I use that to track my progress with it. That's not really gamifying it, but I am curious to see if anybody else does that. I don't do that at all. And I don't know whether I should. But it's never really something that's occurred to me. Next question from Lothania. This is a good question. I like this one. This is, would you demo a game that you don't like? They say, I can imagine it's easier to explain Nucleum or Marrakesh a dozen times, and I demoed Nucleum a dozen times at Essen this year, if you actually enjoy them yourself and it's not just a job that has to be done. So in the past, I have been working as for various publishers at exhibitions and conventions where I've demoed games. And some of those games I have really, really enjoyed. Some of them I've not enjoyed as much. Thankfully, the position that I'm now in My demoing services are in demand, and I normally have a number of publishers who are offering a space on their demo team, is that I can be picky about which ones I want to do. And demoing Nucleum is something that I very much enjoyed doing, and that's what I wanted to do. If Board and Dice actually said something like, oh, we don't want you to demo Nucleum, we want you to demo, you know, this light and fluffy 15-minute filler game for 4 days that isn't very good, they wouldn't say it's not very good, but, you know, I looked at it, I'd be thinking, I don't want to do that. And I'd hope that I would be able to say, thanks very much for that, but really, I'm not really into doing that sort of thing. So, yeah, thankfully for me, I'm in a position where I can do that. And yeah, but there are times in the past where, you know, I've agreed to demo for a publisher and the game that they asked me to demo was not one that I particularly liked. What is my stance on Mega Sour Candy? I'm pretty sure I won't like it because I don't like anything that's sour. I have very, very sensitive taste buds to certain things, and anything that's sour, I can't eat at all. So yeah, Mega Sour Candy for me would not be a thing. Brian wants to know that I've mentioned somewhere online that I created a rule for the original Zhangguo, which wasn't adopted in the new version. What rule was it? So in the original Zhangguo, which was published by What's Your Game, I was part of the development team I helped with the development of the game, in that when it was finished, we played it a few times, and I helped out, play test it and things like that. But there was one rule in there where you have these unification tokens, and whenever you gain unification tokens, you can only gain as many as is in the supply. And one of the things that I, when I put my development hat on, is I really try to avoid what I call the negative player experience, where a player has something happen to them in the game which gives them a negative feeling, because that's going to make them unhappy, it's going to put them off potentially playing the game or anything like that. So in this game, there's these unification tokens, and as I say, there's a fixed amount of them based on player count. So let's say there's 12 of them, and let's say as the round goes on, people are doing actions that get these unification tokens. Well, if I do an action that gets me 3 unification tokens, but there's only one left in the supply, that potentially is a negative player experience, because I go, ah, I'm doing this thing, it gets me 3 tokens, there's only one left, so I'll get that one token. So my rule was, anytime you would get tokens, and there aren't any, you get 1 point for every token that you would get. Now, what that does is it actually removes that negative player experience in going, oh, you can only have one token, but don't worry, you can have a couple of points instead, without actually changing the game too much. Because what it does is it doesn't really imbalance the game or affect the game in much of a way, but it does make people feel that they haven't wasted anything. That rule did not make it into the new edition of the game because it wasn't in the original version. Well, it was in the original version, but it wasn't in the original version that the designers pitched to Watch Your Game. It was a late addition to the game, thanks to, you know, my feedback and my suggestions. So anyway, that's what it was. And if you like that rule, you can play the new version with that rule. If you have players who go, I wanted something and it'd run out, whatever. But anyway, that's that. Next question from a different Brian. Brian Robson is asking, if I held a charity Jaffa Cakeathon, where supporters sponsored you per Jaffa Cake eaten, how many Jaffa Cakes do you reckon you could polish off in 3 minutes? Good question. I don't know. 3 minutes? So he says, with enough practice, do you think you could beat the current world record of 102? No. I don't think I could beat the current world record of 102. 102 Jaffa Cakes in 3 minutes? How many could I polish off? I don't know. But I wouldn't really want to do that, because it's probably quite unhealthy. Brian is also asking, is there anything you would have liked to have done at Essen this year but didn't have the time, e.g. not catching up with somebody or not picking up a game? Yes, there were a number of people who I didn't spend enough time with at Essen, which is a shame, because obviously I know a lot of people in the industry, and it's very difficult to some people I didn't manage to catch at all. I'm really glad that I had a chat with some people, but it was just 5-10 minutes here and there. And there are certain people who I would have happily sat down and chatted to for, you know, half an hour, an hour. There were a few publishers that I just didn't get chance to see, ran out of time to see them. As for not picking up a game, I had my eye on a couple of games, but because the suitcases were already full, I thought, yeah, okay, I've definitely got enough games, and I am trying to reduce the number of games that I come back with, because as I've said in many, many other videos, there's no way I can come back with all of the new games. And when I see these pictures of people's hauls and it's like 60, 70 games, I'm like, well, I'm not going to have time to cover 60 or 70 games on the channel in the next year. And it doesn't matter the next year. New games are going to be arriving in December and then January and then February and then March. It's just, it's nonstop. So coming back with about 15 to 20 new games for me feels manageable. Post-Brexit, have you ever had trouble with customs bringing all of the new board games back into the UK from Essen? No, I haven't. But we did look into it and we found out that there is actually a limit, which is about £400, I think. So if you go to Essen and you buy up to £400 worth of games, you are allowed to bring those back into the UK without paying any duty or anything like that, which I found really interesting, because if you order a game from the EU, you have to pay customs duty on it. But if you go there and you buy 400 quid's worth, you don't have to. Now, the reality is that if you do get stopped by customs on the way back, how are they going to know how much things are worth? You're not going to get receipts for everything and things like that. But no, I've not had any trouble with customs. And bearing in mind, I bring back a huge amount of games which I didn't buy, which were given to me for the GridCon charity raffle. So at least 2/3 of the games that I came home with this year, some of which I haven't got yet, and a big thank you to Mark and Sally, Nilsson and Vashti, for transporting some games home with them, they are for the charity raffle. They're not mine. So no money was given and no money is being made on them. But of course, there's no proof of that. There's no evidence of that. So yeah, I am curious to know if anybody has been caught at customs for bringing games back from Essen. Next question from Scott. Favourite board and dice big box game of the ones that I have played? So I've actually had a good think about this. And board and dice have done some fantastic games over the years, but I've just picked a few that I think are really good. Teotihuacan is probably still my favourite, although I have really only just touched the base game. I haven't really touched any of the expansions for it. But when the big box of that comes out later this year, next year, I'll be diving into the expansions for that. So yeah, definitely Teotihuacan. Nucleum, I think, is fantastic. Really like Nucleum and still just touching the edges of that. Want to explore that more. But I also like Takenu. I think Takenu is very good. Zapotec as well is very good. Yeah, they're just some of the ones that I've picked. Next question from Kenneth. Which would you recommend for two players? The Exit series, the Unlock series, or one of the Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective boxes? All of them, for different reasons. It really depends. So first of all, me and Vicky have played all of them and all of them. Well, we haven't played all of the Exit games, but we have played all of the Unlocks, I think. Almost all of the Unlocks. And we've played all of the Sherlock Holmes ones. So the Exit ones and the Unlock ones are your typical escape room style games. Well, your Exit ones are definitely your escape room style games. So if you like 45-minute game, it's a bit of a puzzle. You're trying to solve puzzles. You're trying to get codes. That's the Exit games. Unlock is more of an adventure, more of a story with some puzzles in it. But again, you're looking at probably 45 to 60 minutes. The Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective is a very, very different game. I mean, we love them, but they are 3 to 4 hour games, huge amount of narrative. And whilst you're not really technically solving puzzles as such, it is a mystery. You are trying to piece together bits of information. But unlike the puzzle games where you go, oh, look, we're going to piece together the scissors with the string and we've cut the string. Yay, we're clever. The Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective are very much more narrative, speaking to people, speaking to other people, finding out information, and then you having to work out the connections yourself. Nobody's going to tell you, oh, you've been to this location and you've been to this location, therefore you know he did it. It's not like that. You've got to really work it out. So they are very, very different, but we love all of them. So it really depends what you want. If you're looking for an experience similar to an escape room, you want to do the exit or the unlock ones rather than the Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is a very different thing. Next question from Hilmar. He says, now that we're running GridCon for the fourth time, what things are just running smoothly and what parts always stress you out a little since you cannot control them until they appear, happen, or it's time to run it? So we are currently in the midst of doing the final prep for GridCon 4. It is stressful because I'm having to spend pretty much every evening. I haven't had an evening to myself for weeks, not counting going out playing games last night, because every night is sat in front of the TV doing GridCon admin. The number of cancellations, we are still getting some cancellations, which is an admin overhead because you've got to go on, you've got to cancel the ticket, you've got to restock it, you've got to go to the waiting list, you've got to contact somebody, you've got to wait 2 days, you've got to contact them again. They don't respond. You've then got to go to the next person on the waiting list. Then you've got to make a ticket available. Then you've got to sell them. So one cancellation is at least 30 to 40 minutes of work. And we're getting a few cancellations in at the moment. We, you know, putting together the signs, doing all of that stuff. Thankfully, a lot of stuff is based on what we did last year. So we know, we haven't built the library yet, but we know that process. We went through all of that last year. We bought the extra shelves. We know how that works. We know how the Hot Games library is going to work. We've had the meetings with the hotel. So GridCon 4, from our point of view, is going a lot smoother than GridCon 3 preparation was. And I wouldn't have said it's stressful in a way, other than it's taking a lot of time and we are just going through it. COVID still adds some level of stress because you don't know. You know, there may be a COVID spike at some point in the next couple of weeks. We really don't know. So there's always that hovering over us. But we are at the same venue as we were from last year. So that puts a huge amount of things, because GridCon 3 was very, very stressful because it was a new venue for the first time. And this time we've got through a lot of the teething issues. Have we considered running GridCon twice a year rather than once? We have, and we were actually going to do it. So before COVID, we had plans to run two GridCons a year. But then during COVID, we sat down and we decided, actually, you know, GridCon for us is something that we want to run. We enjoy running, but we don't run it to make money. It is a huge amount of work. One a year was enough for us. Hilmar also says, what other local conventions where the focus is mostly or entirely on gaming do I attend each year? So there are a number of regular ones. I attend BayCon each year, which is down in Exeter. So that's 15 minutes down the road for me. That's in April each year. I also most years get to ManaCon, which is over in Leicester, but I wasn't able to get there this year. HandyCon is now back. HandyCon runs four times a year. In fact, there's one this weekend. But I hope to get to one of the HandyCons next year. And then also next year, for the first time, a good friend of ours, Matt, is running Full Board Gaming, which is down in Torquay. So if you're interested in that, it is a residential convention. So if you're local, I'm not saying you can't go. You can go, but you have to buy a room at the hotel. So it is a residential convention in that you buy a stay at the hotel and it includes access to the convention. Both me and Vicky will be going to that. Vicky will be enjoying herself in the spa and reading a book and helping out on the registration desk. I will be demoing games probably and helping Matt wherever needed. If you're interested in that, look it up on the website. Full Board Gaming, you're putting it in the link. There you go, link's in the chat. Next question from Peter. Do I think that content creators can generate high views and subscribers solely based on social circle and physical attractiveness despite having low-valued content? It's a really good question, Peter. Peter says he's seen other content creators who shoot up to 20,000 subscribers within months. He says he's watched their content and observed that their knowledge of board games pales greatly in comparison to yours. Well, thank you very much, Peter. I mean, you know, I've been in the gaming hobby for over 40 years now. I have been around. I do know a few things, and I work full time in the industry, and I've worked full time in the industry for 10 years. So it's good to know that my knowledge about board games comes across, because I do have quite a bit of experience in that. Do I think that content creators can generate views and subscribers based on social circles and physical attractiveness? I think that's an element of it. There are definitely some YouTube channels out there where the number of views that they get on the videos, I would say, is affected by the attractiveness of the person doing the videos. I think that's just the reality of the situation. I would like to say that, I mean, I've watched some of these channels, and I think it's unfair to say that even though their board game knowledge might not be as extensive as mine, that the quality of the content they make is not good enough to make videos. I think it is, but I don't get to I don't get to watch much channel. So Peter might be saying, look, that there's some channels out there that just rely on, you know, who knows them and their attractiveness, and they don't actually know that much about games. But you're absolutely right. You know, I have seen a number of channels shoot up over the last few years that have now got 60, 70,000 subscribers. I've got 45,000, which sounds great, but I've been doing it for 10 years. I get about 500 new subscribers a month, and I've seen other channels get literally thousands of new subscribers a month. And these are new channels from people who've only been in the hobby a few years, but that's fine. You know, whatever content they create, if they want to create it, then that's fine. Jenny says she's learned recently, and I didn't know this, Jenny, so thank you for pointing this out to me. But Jenny has learned recently that many board game components, including a lot of the cardboard chits and cards, are not recyclable because they've been heavily treated with plastic for durability. This makes me sad. It makes me sad as well, because we recycle all of that stuff in the recycling, certainly for prototypes. I don't generally recycle published games, but certainly prototype components. But sometimes those prototype components are a similar quality. So yeah, that is a shame. I can understand why they have to do that, because otherwise they'd just wear out. But yeah, it is sad. Jenny also says, in the past few years, every game feels like it's getting a new edition, reprint, spin-off, etc. Many of these have little or no rules changes, just art changes and very minor updates. As soon as a new edition is announced, the older edition invariably loses trade value. People like the new stuff, so many perfectly playable copies of games might end up in landfills as opposed to being traded away or sold secondhand, because people like new stuff. Yeah, I understand publishers want to make money and re-release successful games to give the company a boost of revenue. Where do you see the balance lie between social responsibility to the environment versus generating revenue for games publishers and us as gamers? That's a really interesting topic, Jenny, and I don't feel qualified, despite my 40 plus years of experience. I mean, if we touch on, for example, Zhangguo has had a new edition recently, and there have been some minor rules changes and completely new artwork. But Zhangguo is a very, very good game that was out of print, has been out of print for a long time. The designers have got the rights back, and in one way, it's great that that game now has a new audience, because people are now able to get the game again. But there's been a lot. There's been a lot of, oh, here's a second edition of a new game. You know, in the last year, I can think of Teotihuacan having a new big deluxe box set. La Granja, the deluxe master set of that. But it's not just the base game. It's got loads of extra modules thrown in. I'm trying to think what else we've had. We've had the special edition of Castles of Burgundy. There's been loads. Everywhere you look, there is a new edition of an older game coming out. So it is something that I'm definitely seeing a lot more of over the last couple of years than I've seen before. As for your question about the balance between social responsibility to the environment, it's not something that I've thought of. I think, to be fair to publishers, it makes them sound evil, and I don't mean to sound them sound evil, but they need to make games to make money. And if I had the opportunity, for example, to find a game, I'm just going to look around my collection and I'm going to try and find, there you go, Shipyard has just had a new edition by Delicious Games. Now, Shipyard first came out in 2009. I've asked this question before and I've been told the answer before and I can't remember, but anyway, it's over 10 years since Shipyard came out. Is it irresponsible of them to publish a new edition? No, not at all. Did they publish that new edition in order to make money. Well, yes, because they're a publisher. That's their job. Their job is to make money. They wouldn't have published that game if they weren't expecting to make money on it. But from the publisher's point of view, because the publisher is the designer and his wife, they wanted to make the game because it's known as a very good game and it's been out of print for so many years. So they thought, we'll do a new version of it because people will want that. And I think people do want it. I don't think they would have thought of and thought, oh, well, wait a minute. There was a version 15 years ago. People are now going to throw that away in the recycling bin and they're going to buy the new version. I don't think so. I don't think they would think that. I hope not. Anyway, Jenny also says that she recently watched a few of my older videos and I have mentioned on multiple occasions that Trains is a broken game. And she says that my group has played the game several times and haven't encountered any game-breaking aspects. Can I elaborate on what makes the game broken? Yes. And people will disagree with this. But the basic game of Trains, which I think is from AEG, and I do like the game. It is a deck-building game where you are doing all of the usual deck-building stuff a la Dominion, but you are also building trains on a track and building buildings and things like that. So I really like the game. But the base game of Trains, I say broken because there was a strategy which pretty much always won the game, which was don't actually build any railways on the board. Now, again, the idea of this game is that you are building railways on the board, and if you don't build any railways on the board and you just concentrate on building skyscrapers, then you win. And this is a known thing. I've seen it done myself, and I've spoken to many other people who say, "Oh yeah, just forget the route building, just build skyscrapers." Because one of the great things about the game is that when you build track on the board, you get these rubble cards that go into your deck that clog it up, which simulates the fact that you've had to clear rubble to build the railway track. It's great, but the problem is by building the railway track, you're getting more rubble. Anyway. That is fixed with the tweak to the house rule, which you can only build skyscrapers. So my house rule that I use for the game is you are only allowed to buy one skyscraper card for each city on the board that you have connected to. So you can't buy skyscrapers until you have built track to cities, and then you can build the skyscrapers in those cities. And just that slight tweak to the rule fixes that problem of the game because it stops somebody just building skyscrapers and not building track. Anyway, next question from Frederick. He says, sometimes he has backed games just because they were made in Europe, at the same time as he has not backed games because they were manufactured far away. The reasons for this are partly to cut down on long freight and to support local manufacturing. His question to me is, do I ever consider things outside of the game quality when deciding on which games to buy or back? So, Frederick, what we're going to do, and I'm going to ask Chrissy if Chrissy is watching, could you turn that into a question on the guild? Because that question is more for other people rather than me, and I'd like to get other people's opinions on it. So this is a question from Frederick, basically saying that he prefers to buy games in Europe to cut down on the long freight and to support local manufacturing. And how much is that a factor for people? Because my personal feelings on it is that I don't think most people take that into account. I think most people just see the game, they look at whether the game is for themselves, and they buy the game. And I might be wrong on this, but I'm kind of generalizing, and I'm thinking very few people actually look and go, oh, wait a minute, the game is being made over there, and this, that, and the other. Some people probably do. Frederick does. The reason why I'm saying that the question doesn't really apply to me is because of the work that I do in the industry, and I get sent games. So if I'm going to work on a game, I'm working on that game. Where that game is made is irrelevant to me because it doesn't matter. I've got to get the game to work on the game. So yeah, it isn't something that I factor in. Next question from Nino Chuka 4. If I had to choose one game convention to attend next year, which one would I choose from a non-professional point of view? And that is easy, and that is Gen Con. And a lot of people will expect me to say Essen. But Gen Con, for me, is more enjoyable to go to than Essen. Essen is fantastic. It's great. But Gen Con has such a buzz, such an atmosphere. And when the exhibitors hall close, there's still a million things to do. And just everything about Gen Con, just the energy that everybody has there, it is fantastic. So yeah, if I could go to one games convention from a non-professional point of view, it would be Gen Con. Next question from Ray. Ray says that she's received quite a few notifications from me when I back Kickstarters. And she says, do I back them all at game level or at token level? So the first thing is, I have a question for anybody watching this live, or if you're watching this back afterwards. Please, can you tell me how I can turn off those notifications? Now, I was not aware that when I back something on Kickstarter, that people get notified about it. Is that something that I can turn off myself, or is it something that you have to turn off so that you no longer get notifications from me? The reason why I back them is because I generally want to support the project and to engage in the comments. You will find recently that I have backed the Dragons Down Kickstarter campaign because I did a video on the game and I want to support them. And I also backed the Old King's Crown, which went live yesterday on Kickstarter. I backed them both at $1. So most of the games that I back on Kickstarter are at the $1 level. There are certain occasions where it's a small publisher and it's a cheap game, or it's a print and play game or something like that, where I will back them at like $3 or $5 or something like that. But I do not back games at the actual level that the game is there for. Most of the time, I will probably get sent a copy of the game anyway afterwards, so I don't need that extra copy. But yeah, generally I just back it at the token level. Ray also asks that next year she wants to volunteer to demo on a stand. What is my advice for doing this? Do you mean UK Games Expo or do you mean Essen? Because what I would do is I would recommend doing UK Games Expo before you do Essen, as a bit of a warm-up. So first of all, make sure you get a good offer. Now that might sound mercenary, but if you are going to be working at an exhibitor's booth and you're going to be demoing, let's say you demo for 8 hours a day, 4 hours in the morning, then a break, then another 4 hours, and you do that for 3 days, you are effectively a full-time employee. And if at the end of that, they say you can have one free game for each day you work, well, I'm sorry, but that one free game has cost them $10. So they are giving you $30 or £30 for 24 hours of work, right? That's not on. They should be giving you more games or payment or park payment for a hotel, or they should be giving you an hourly rate. They should be giving you an exhibitor's badge. Now, I'm not saying every publisher should, because some small publishers can't afford that. But what I'm saying is, don't work for free. Don't work 3 days for like two free games where they're not going to pay for anything, because exhibitors have spent a lot of money on getting that booth. They've spent a huge amount of money on hotels. They can afford to pay their demo staff. And any that don't should. So, also demo a game that you can like, because otherwise it's not going to be enjoyable for you. Don't work too much. Don't agree to say, oh yeah, I'll demo for you for 9 hours a day with no break. No. Have your breaks. Definitely have your breaks. I've been demoing at, you know, Expo and Essen for over 10 years now. So I know it can be enjoyable. It can be rewarding if you like demoing games. But if you don't like demoing games, then yeah. My advice is find a publisher who has games that you like. Contact them. Ask them if they are looking for people to demo for them. And basically start a conversation with them and see. But don't... Even if your favourite publisher says, oh yeah, you can demo for us and we'll buy you a hot dog once a day, and that's it, don't accept that. Next question from Stuart. Why is Essen in Essen? Is there some industry significance, or did it snowball from a predominantly German trade show to what it is today? So the reason Essen is in Essen is one of the biggest locations for trade shows, because it has a building known as the Messe, which is a bit like our NEC, but four times as big. Well, maybe not four times as big, but it's huge. So not many places have that. And the reason why it's in Germany is Euro games have been very popular in Germany. So that's why it's in Germany, and specifically that's why it's in Essen, as far as I know. Stuart says, what's also my top five solo games? Now, Stuart, you're asking me to spend 2 days thinking about what my top solo games are. I mean, first of all, I've made a very, very quick list here. Under Falling Skies, for sure. Definitely, definitely like that game. But also games that I've enjoyed the solo mode of a lot. Maracaibo, I did an entire solo playthrough of the entire campaign. Lost Ruins of Arnak, I think the solo mode for that is really good. There's lots and lots of games out there whose solo modes I really enjoy. Pretty much anything by Vladimir Suhy, because they are no bot, no AI, just play the game yourself and try and score well. Anything by Uwe Rosenberg, again, there generally isn't a bot. It's generally just me playing the game myself. So anything from those two. Yeah, but I don't actually have a top five. Angus says, what games have I got from last year's Essen, so Spiel 22, that I am still playing or would like to play again? That is a really good question, Angus, because as a content creator, you will find, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, most content creators are not playing anything from Spiel 22 again because they've moved on. And unfortunately, I'm in the same boat. But there are ones that I am still playing now. First of all, Heat, Pedal to the Metal. I am still playing that because I'm playing it on Board Game Arena. It's gone live on Board Game Arena, and I'm playing it again now. Would I be playing it again had it not been on Board Game Arena? Yes, I would. So Heat, Pedal to the Metal is still getting played. Scout is also still getting played. But there are a number. Oh, and Pictures. Pictures is also still getting played because I picked that up at Essen last year, even though that's not an Essen last year game. But there are other games which I think are great games that I would happily play again. And some of these I'm really annoyed that I haven't played them much. So Hoplomachus Remastered and Hoplomachus Victorum, I really want to play those more. Attiwer, I've played a few times, but I would play that again. Rebuilding Seattle, I think, is a fantastic game. I would happily play that. Frostpunk, I want to play that more. Marrakesh, want to play that more as well. So there are a number of games that came out around the end of last year that I think are fantastic games. Right, I think that's it. I think that's it for all of the live questions, because there's a thing here to say the winner of the contest, and that's from last year. So would you be able to copy the ones there? So what I'm going to do is just going to take a pause, and I'm going to talk about the contest. Each month, as part of these live Q&As, I give away £50 worth of games vouchers to Games Law. Now, out of those £50 of games vouchers, £25 of that is coming from me, and £25 of that is coming from Games Law. So a big thank you to Games Law for helping support the channel. I don't get any money out of that, but one of you is going to win £50. So if you are watching this video live, or if you are watching this video anytime between now and the week of the next Q&A, which will be roughly around the middle of November, you can enter the contest. To enter the contest, it's very, very simple. You just click on the link, which is going to appear in the chat, and it's also going to be in the description of the video. And you just need to put in your name, your email address, whether you are a Patreon supporter or not, and the secret password for today, which is whale. Is it a whale or a dolphin? It's a whale. It's a killer whale. So either whale or killer whale is the secret word for today. This one doesn't have a name yet. Answers on Slack. What name are we going to call the killer whale? Is it going to be Kevin? Kevin the killer whale? We don't have a Kevin, do we? Anyway, the winner for last month is Dark Mind. Dark Mind, you will notice, is in a number of my live chats and may even be in the live chat now. So congratulations, Dark Mind. I have sent you an email. You have won the contest for last month. So you've got £50 of games vouchers from Games Law. Let us know what you are going to buy with them. Right. How are we doing for time? 5 to 6. So these are the questions that that have come through since we've been live on air. The first one is from Elaine. When it's 8:30 her time and 1:30 a.m. my time, she sees that I'm signed on to Board Game Arena. Are you looking for a game? Do you want anyone to gently encourage you to go to sleep? Okay, well, I'm happy to say that with the exception of last night, I am managing to get to sleep before midnight. So I think what that is the fact that I'm on Board Game Arena on the iPad, maybe doing my turn, and then I just close the iPad and I go to sleep. I don't log out of Board Game Arena, or I've left the computer on because I'm rendering a video and I have a tab open. So if you see me logged in to Board Game Arena at some crazy time in the morning, I'm probably not actually awake and logged in. In fact, this might explain a very random message that I got last week from Sabine, who works at Lookout Games. Sabine is my contact at Lookout Games. And Sabine sent me a message through Board Game Arena at 3:30 in the morning. Now, what she was doing up at 3:30 in the morning, I don't know, to say, are you still awake? Well, I didn't see it till 9 o'clock the next morning, and I went back to her and I said, no, I wasn't awake. Is everything okay? And she said, yeah, I just wanted to know if you were awake. And I'm like, no, I wasn't, but you are. And we had this very strange conversation. So no, it's not me awake. Yeah. Okay, apparently it's an orca, which is a dolphin. I thought an orca was a whale. I'm confused. Thank you very much, Chrissy. So, next question from Martin. Have I ever considered expanding gaming rules to become a brand or taking on apprentices? Yes. Well, no, but yes. So, oh God, this is a long story. So, during COVID, what happened is a number of people that I knew were out of work. Some of them were being paid. Some of them lost their jobs. But a lot of people had a lot more time than they used to have. And in my... I had two things going on. I was getting so much rulebook work that I was unable to do all of it myself. And when you combine that with my... And I don't wish to this sound like arrogant or anything like that, but I have an innate desire to try and help people to the point where it's actually not worth it for me. Basically I spend a lot of time doing things, and Vicky questions this and you say, why are you doing that? And it's like, well, I'm doing that to help. What you're doing is you're spending your time and it's not actually of any benefit to you. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. So when you combine those two things together, what happened is over a period of about 6 to 12 months, we started giving some of my rulebook work that I got given to do. Some of it was just light editing. Some of it was actually bigger editing to members of the gaming rules team. And I think there was one point where we had maybe 7 people doing work for gaming rules. Now, they weren't full time. Some of them were just doing a little bit. Some of them were doing a lot. But we got into a position where we were having to spend a number of hours every week just doing project updates with which projects have we got on, who's working on what, have they invoiced us, have they filled in their timesheet, we were running a company with people working. And it was a problem for a few reasons. One of them was some of the quality of work that was coming in was not of a level which I was comfortable with. And I didn't have the time to oversee it or check it myself. Some of the quality of work was not good enough that I then had to redo it myself and couldn't then charge again for it. And ultimately, we were spending so much time doing admin work that it just wasn't worth it. So we decided that we didn't want the company to go in that direction, and we scaled everything back. And now the company is back down to pretty much me. I mean, obviously, I do have people coming round and helping with the videos, and Vicky does a lot of stuff in the background that you don't see. But yeah, we've scaled it back. So yeah, we didn't. Neither of us want to do that, but that potentially could have happened at some point. Next question from Mitri: what board game would you like to become reality? For example, Underwater Cities or Bunny Kingdom. Well, I've not played Bunny Kingdom. What board game would I like to become reality? I mean, I mean, I'm looking around this room, but 90% of my collection is not in this room. I mean, a lot of these games are historical, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of games that I've got with very cool settings, like Perseverance, like Anachrony, like Cloudspire. Would I like any of those games to become reality? Do I want to be stranded on an island with dinosaurs struggling to survive and gathering shipwrecked bits? Probably not. Yeah, I'm not sure I can answer that question. Let me know in the chat what people think. Matthew's saying Bonfire. Yeah, with the gnomes. Tricerion. Yeah, I think if you like that kind of thing, but it's hard for me to set historical settings with happening now. Yeah, I think you've stumped me there. I'm sure there probably is some games that I would like to see become reality. I mean, if we think about future games, I mean, Netrunner, for example. I love the setting of Netrunner, the whole cyberpunk feel and things like that. So, I mean, is that a reality now? I guess in some ways that is a reality. But I think that kind of setting, I quite like that sort of neuromancer, cyberpunky type setting. ISS Vanguard, definitely. I'd love to see ISS Vanguard, you know, the story behind that be a real thing. Would I want to be on ISS Vanguard exploring the reaches of space? Well, yeah, cool. But yeah, okay. Right, next question from Brett. Have I thought about recording the roundtable discussion and releasing it as a separate video? I've actually thought about that many, many times, Brett. Yeah, so Brett's referring to the thing that I mentioned earlier on when I said at the end of these videos, at the end of the playthrough videos that are not sponsored, we have a round the table discussion. And you're going to see two of those on Friday. So on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock on the channel live is going to be White Castle. We're going to be doing a tutorial playthrough and review of White Castle. Then in the evening, we're going to be doing a tutorial playthrough and review of Kutna Hora. Neither of those videos are sponsored. So they are funded purely through Patreon. I'm not being paid anything to create those videos, which means we're going to have a round the table discussion, a review at the end of those videos. And Brett is saying what I could do is I could get that video, chop out the last bit and upload it as a separate video and say, this is our round the table discussion about it. I have thought about it. It probably would take me about an hour per video. But first of all, I'd have to remember to press record beforehand. Then I'd have to edit it. Then I'd have to do a new thumbnail. Then I'd have to upload it. It's about an hour's work to do, but I have considered it before. I've just one of those things that I've never got around to doing. Next question from Phil. Which UK city stroke town do I think would make the most wonderfully dry Euro? Well, we've already got Brass Birmingham and Brass Lancashire. A UK city or town would make the most wonderfully dry Euro. I mean, most of them. I mean, not much happens in Columpton. What we could have is we could have a Columpton board game about opening charity shops and hairdressers, because that's pretty much what we've got. Yeah, there's probably most UK cities and towns, I think, would make dry Euros, like Slough or Skegness or something like that. Aberdeen, the board game would be Granite Great. Milton Keynes, yes, Milton Keynes. No, with all the roundabouts. The magic roundabout in Swindon, yeah. Yeah. Brass Newport. Yeah, Columpton, the board game. We absolutely need that. Next question from Robert. Have I played Salem or Deadwood from Fascade Games? Not only have I not played them, I've never heard of them. So apologies if anybody from Fascade Games is watching, but I have not heard of Salem and I have not heard of Deadwood. And I've not heard of Fascade Games. It just shows you how many games and how many publishers are out there. So no, I don't have any thoughts on those. Right, there is a question from Vicky for you, which is about your jewellery. Oh no, am I a picky eater? Is that the question? It's not about your jewelry. Okay. It's so Vicky is currently doing silver jewelry, and no, I'm not a picky eater, and we generally have the same tastes in food. Yeah, generally. There's a couple of things that you would like that I wouldn't, but yeah. What's for dinner tonight? Dinner tonight is amazing. Dinner tonight is leftovers from last night, which is fragrant rice with chicken, with a dal sauce, with a naan bread, with then something else that goes on the dal sauce, with it's parsley, except you forgot the parsley yesterday. Anyway, it's really, really nice. And we're having it again on Sunday when Mark and Sally come over. So yeah, Vicky made dinner last night and thankfully made enough of it for tonight as well. Next question from Sven. Some games are so good, there is a community producing new content with the goodwill of the publisher. For example, Age of Steam. Huge amount of fan-made maps for Age of Steam. Which games do you know which are heavily supported by fans? Oh, well, you see, I would say something like Too Many Bones is heavily supported by fans, but I don't think anybody is creating new gear locks for Too Many Bones. Now, if they have, great. But I don't think there is that much fan content for Too Many Bones, even though there is a massive support base for it and a massive community support for it. So, yeah, that's more of a question for people in the chat. And if you're watching this video back afterwards, let me know which games out there similar to Age of Steam is having a lot of fan-made content. One that I do know for sure is Marvel Champions. I know Marvel Champions has got so much fan-created content for it, with people creating other superhero decks, DC Universe decks, and everything. Another one is the Arkham Horror card game. There is a lot of fan-made content for the Arkham Horror card game as well, which is what Rick said. Monica's saying Terraforming Mars has some fan-made. Yeah, there's a lot of fan-made cards from Terraforming Mars, and there are a number of fan-made maps for Terraforming Mars as well. Gloomhaven, I think there is some fan-made content for Gloomhaven, but maybe not as much as the other ones. I'm not sure. Yeah. Horrified has apparently got lots of fan-made monsters. Okay, so yeah, there are a number of games out there where there is a huge amount of fan-made content. Oh, and Peter is saying Racetracks for Heat. Yeah, Heat only comes with four racetracks. I believe there's going to be some more being released as part of an expansion set at some point in the future, which I may know when it's coming out. But yeah, if you go online, there are a lot of fan-made racetracks for Heat. They came out really quickly after the game came out, and they're really good. You look at them and they are, you know, they've done a really good job with them. Next question from Giuseppe. What do I think of The Warp? He said, I saw your gameplay and did two turns in Essen. Seemed like a good game. I really liked The Warp. I think The Warp is one of those games which deserves more credit and more attention that it got. I have brought back the 5 to 6 player expansion with me from Essen, and there is going to be a 6-player game of it happening at GridCon. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought mechanically it was very clever. It was very streamlined. It had some really interesting decisions. I thought the combat was good and well played. So yeah, I really did enjoy the game. Next question from Monica. Is there a party game you love spending time on? Yes. Well, I mean, we love playing Just One, So Clover. They are our go-to games. We have played a lot of Codenames over the past 6, 7 years. Just One and So Clover have not killed Codenames, but have kind of mostly replaced it because they are just less downtime and more fun. But other party games that we like spending time on, I don't class. Is Pictures a party game? Yeah, Pictures is a party game. So we like Pictures as well. Yeah, so they're ones that we do really enjoy. Now, in Essen, I played a new party game from PD Verlag called It's a Balloon. And I don't actually have that game with me yet. My copy of the game is with Luke Hector. He's going to bring it back to me for GridCon, but it was a lot of fun. We played it a couple of nights in Essen. And yeah, it's a bit of a silly party game, but it was very much a fun party game and it worked quite well. So next question from Monica. Have I ever come home with a brand new game and then find that you had the same game in your collection already? No, that's not happened. It has happened to a friend of mine, Pete, when he buys a game and then finds out that his wife's also bought him a copy of the game because she heard him talking about it. But no, that's not happened to me. What has happened to me is where I got the fourth game in the Micro Macro series and then came home thinking, great, I've now got game four. That is the collection complete. Wait a minute, where's game three? According to BGG, I own game three in the series, but have absolutely no memory of ever getting it. So I added a game to my BGG collection, thought I had it, turns out I didn't have it. Thank you very much to Nadine from Pegasus Spiel that has kindly offered to send me a copy of game number three in the Micro Macro series so that I will now have all four. Question from Mark. Do I need Dominant Species Marine in my collection? What would you say are comparable games? The game that I would compare the most to Dominant Species Marine is Dominant Species. Now, I much prefer Dominant Species. I know some people don't. I know some people prefer Dominant Species Marine to Dominant Species, but I much prefer Dominant Species. So for me, that's the one I would go with. And I would say you don't need Marine. I don't think you need both in your collection. But as I say, look into them both, try both, and then decide which one you prefer. Next question from Christian. Do I have any info about Elf Creek Games? They are very silent in the past few months and many people are waiting for Atlantis Rising. I have heard of Elf Creek Games and that's it. I have no professional relationship with them. I have never spoken to them. If I have spoken to them, I've forgotten about it. And Atlantis Rising is a game that I've heard of, but I've not been involved in that myself. So unfortunately, I don't know anything about Elf Creek Games. Matthew says, do I think New York City is as good as the other City Collection games, even if it is lighter? Absolutely. And the one thing that I want to mention about New York City is about the solo modes. So I will be honest here. The solo mode for Hamburg, I think is awful. Really, really awful. The solo mode for Amsterdam, I also think is awful. The solo mode for New York City is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And the solo mode for New York City is actually not for just playing solo, but it's here's the rules for a dummy player. So you could play a two-player game of New York City with two dummy players, and it simulates them really well. Or you could play a solo game with three opponents. The reason why it's so good is that it has difficulty scaling. There's like nine different modes for each solo bot. So you could play bot number one could be B2 and another one could be C4 or something like that. Sounds like droids from Star Wars. But yeah, no, the solo mode for New York City is really good. As for the game, I think it is as good. You're right. You're absolutely right. It is lighter than the others. It is much lighter than Marrakesh. It is lighter than Hamburg. It's lighter than Amsterdam. But I really like New York City as a game. I think it is a very good streamlined, clever use of cards game, area control, points at the end mostly. Yeah, I rate it as a game. I would probably say that New York City for me is in the first six games in the series. New York City might be my third favourite out of the six, I think. Third or fourth, maybe. Next question from Twilight Scuttle. We've got three questions left and it's 6:15, so we do have time for a couple more questions if anybody has any. Can I invite you to visit you at Eyebrow? How are you going to pronounce these? Vicky's laughing at me. Saskatchewan, there you go, in Canada. You are allowed to invite me. The chance of me actually being able to come and see you, I mean, I'd love to, I really would, but we don't get to go on holiday that much. And I've been to Canada once, but I went, this was like 20 odd years ago. I went to Fredericton in New Brunswick. And then I hired a car and I drove through Quebec, Montreal, Toronto, and then back round to America. So I've only seen that small section of Canada. I haven't seen any of where, you know, the west side or even further north. But we have had Connor McGooey and his family come to see us. And we did say, oh, maybe if we go on holiday to Canada, maybe we'll go and see you. And then we looked on a map to see where he is. Wow. So far away. I think he's up in, is it Ontario? I think it's way. It's a long, long way north. And I'm like, is it not just like glacial wastes there all the time? Yeah, he's very, very far north. So I don't know where you are, but I will look you up on a map. And if we ever do go on holiday to Canada and we do go near your near the town where you live, then we'll pop in for a cup of tea. Next question from DZ Ferroni. With so many games, do you always keep track of when you lend a game to somebody, or do you think many games have got misplaced over the years, inspired by the macro story? So I have been saying for years that I really need to keep a spreadsheet of when I lend games to people, and I don't. And I really need to, because I'm sure some games have got, so Time Stories. So somebody wanted to borrow Time Stories last year, and I know for a fact Time Stories and all of the expansions for it are up in the attic. So I went up into the attic and I found the bag with all of the expansions. There was no base game. So it's like, okay, who did I lend this to? So we had a good think about it and we remembered we lent it to Robert, a friend of mine. We definitely lent it to him. So I spoke to him and said, have you still got Time Stories? He said, no, I gave it back 6 months ago. So I no longer have my copy of Time Stories, which means I've got all of the expansions for people to borrow, but I can't lend them the base game. So that's definitely gone missing. And I'm sure I've lost other copies of games over the years. But yeah, I don't have a spreadsheet, and maybe I should. Right now, I know that Pete has Halls of Hegra. And Mark and Sally have got Ezra and Nehemiah, but that's a prototype. They've got something else. You say, we don't even know. Anyway, yes, so I don't, but I should. Next question from Matt Smith. Have you played Secrets of the Lost Tomb? Well, let's have a look at that on Board Game Geek. I don't think I have. I'm looking it up now. Secrets of the Lost Tomb. Secrets of the Lost Tomb, 2015. Nope. It's got a million expansion sets. No. It's from Everything Epic. And it's got a front cover which turns me off the game straight away, because just looking at that, it's a cooperative pulp action adventure board game. Yeah. Looking at it, that doesn't look like... Again, I'm judging a book by its cover. But no, I've not played it. That doesn't look... that doesn't look like a game that I would enjoy, but who knows? Who knows? But no, I've not played it. Right, have we got any other questions coming in? Or are we wrapping up slightly earlier than normal? We've made good time today. Just a quick mention again about the contest. If you're watching this and you haven't yet entered the contest, please do. And I'll say this every month I say this. We get about 1,000 people in total watching these videos, and less than 100 enter the contest. Not sure why, because it's free to enter. And even if you don't live in the UK, it's £50 worth of games vouchers. So even if you pay £10 postage, you can still buy a £40 game. Or even if you live in America, you can still buy a £30 game. You can still use the vouchers wherever you are in the world. So don't feel that because you're not in the UK, you can't enter the contest. You can enter the contest. And if you are a Patreon supporter, you get 2 entries in for every time you enter. You can only enter once. Don't enter more than once. But you get 2 tickets into the hat. Last month's winner was Dark Mind, who I think you said was in the chat at the start of tonight. No, they won last month. They have been in some of the live streams. I've seen their name appear in some of the live streams. Did we decide on a name for the Orca? We haven't. We could do that as a... Have we got some suggestions? Okay, we've got some suggestions. Let me just go back to the... Let's just go back to the document. Where have you put them? Oh, in the chat. Let me have a look. Let's see what questions, let's see what suggestions we've had coming in. It's hard for me to scroll back and do them. Vicky's going to cover them. Any last questions before I disappear? Just as a reminder, this Friday, I've got two live playthroughs coming for you this Friday. Neither of them are sponsored. In fact, this week is a special week in that there's four videos this week. It was going to be five, and it might still be five, but it's four at the moment, and none of them are sponsored. So again, going back to what I always say, I try to do a lot of content which isn't sponsored because of the patron support. So yeah, big thank you to all of my patron supporters for making this video possible. We did Aeon Trespass Odyssey. We did a live stream of that last night, which was a Patreon exclusive. And on Friday, we've got White Castle in the afternoon, and we've got Kutna Hora in the evening. So yeah, all of the videos that I'm making this week, none of them are sponsored in any way. So that is all down to the patron support. And if you've considered supporting me on Patreon and you think, well, why do I need to support Paul on Patreon? You don't need to. Nobody needs to support me on Patreon. But if you want to know where all your money goes, your money goes into me taking time off from the paid work in order to bring you the videos of the non-sponsored stuff. And it's great that I've got that because there are so many games that I want to cover on the channel that some publishers just do not, they don't sponsor videos. Some publishers do, and that's great, but some publishers don't. And I use the Patreon funding to effectively pay for my time to cover all of the extra games. Right, so we've got Orca Nova, we've got Aurelia, we've got Message Retracted, we've got Wally the Whale, Whale Wheaton. Whale Wheaton is actually quite good, although, according to Chrissy, it's not a whale. It's a dolphin. I thought orcas were whales. Have I been living a misinformed life my whole time? Yeah, I think that's probably everything. Barry. My titan that I fused with is called Barry in our Aeon Trespass Odyssey. So yeah, the secret word was whale. But to be honest, if you put orca, that's fine as well. So put whatever you want in the secret word for whatever you think this is. It's completely up to you. But yeah, we'll wrap things up now. Thank you very much for everybody for joining me. There will be a live Q&A in November. Let me just look at the dates. It will be, I think we're going to do one on the 15th. I think the plan was to do one 2 days before GridCon. You're out. Okay? Watch this space for when the Q&A will be. Vicky's got her jewelry courses on Wednesdays. She doesn't have one today, which is why she's here. But is that your last one? Okay, so yeah, Vicky will be at jewelry on Wednesdays in November. So yeah, watch this space. Probably don't want to do it on the Thursday because we won't be here. But we may do it. I can't do Tuesday because of it. We may do it on the 9th. We may do it on Thursday the 9th. Rather than afterwards. It'd be nice to do another Q&A before GridCon. Or maybe we'll do it on the Sunday or something like that. But yeah, watch this space. It will be somewhere around the second week in November, and you have until then to enter the contest. Right. I'll say goodbye. Goodbye from me. Goodbye from Vicky. We'll see you all next time. And I'm going downstairs for fragrant rice, dal, parsley, and whatever it was. See you all on Friday.